Ukraine's acting government has issued an arrest warrant for President Viktor Yanukovych, who was on the run after being toppled by bloody street protests in Kiev that left at least 82 people dead. It was the deadliest violence in Ukraine since the country achieved independence from the Soviet Union 22 years ago. Over the weekend, jailed former Prime Minister Yulia Tymoshenko was released, and thousands of Ukrainians flocked to Yanukovych's abandoned opulent estate, touring the grounds, which include a private golf course and zoo. Uncertainty reigns as some fear parts of eastern Ukraine could break away from a pro-Western government in Kiev in favor of Russia. Joining us to discuss the latest events in Ukraine and what they mean for the future are USD political science professor Tim Shorn and history professor David Burrow. Tim Shorn is USD's International Studies Program Director, and Dave Burrow teaches Russian and Soviet history, among other things. And Tim and Dave, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Well, were you surprised at how things unfolded this weekend? A lot of dramatic things. Dave, let's start with you.
I was certainly surprised. I think the indications were that the Prime Minister was going to, or the President was going to attempt to hold on, and that he was going to be able to rely on Russia backing him up as the legitimately elected president. And there's in the various colored revolutions in the former Soviet republics, and they've had violence in the past. And often the Russian government has said that there are always these roving groups of anarchists who are going around who start throwing Molotov cocktails and start hurling things around. And that's certainly the line that they were putting out. Lots of people, observers in Russia and observers of Russia and around the world, sometimes think those guys are sent in by the governments themselves so that to discredit the peaceful protesters by starting the violence. So it gets very murky when you have violent protests, because immediately people sometimes think that the violence is legitimately an expression of the grievances of the people in the country, and other people think that it's been started by groups that are just basically acting as agents provocateurs to try and discredit peaceful protest. But I was surprised by how swiftly he ended up getting out, and now this fleeing the country I guess he's still in what he considers the safe parts of Ukraine, but Yanukovych just packing up and getting out of Dodge, as it were, is really surprising to me.
Tim Shorn, what were your thoughts on the way things unfolded this weekend?
It really undermines your credibility and legitimacy as a president when you sneak out of town in the middle of the night. And it's really hard to claim then that you're still in power and that a new acting government are usurping constitutional authority. So I think that it was a big surprise, and it was a surprise how he did it. And I am still trying to come to terms with why he felt it necessary to disappear when he did. Because while there were certainly protesters approaching the presidential palace, it didn't seem that the security forces had lost total control. So I'm not quite what propelled him to pull the plug when he did.
Now, going back some 10 years, this isn't the first time that Yanukovych has been removed from power. There was the election that led up to the Orange Revolution. Dave Burrow?
Yeah, this is he's been contending for the presidency before. The 2010 elections was the most recent one that he won. But in 2004, when he had the Orange Revolution elections, he was essentially judged to have won. But then that election was seen as so fraudulent that he then had to back down and go into a runoff, and he lost the runoff to his rival. So he's been in and out of power before. Yulia Tymoshenko, the politician you mentioned who's been released, has been a rival to both the prior presidents, and it's unclear how much authority she has in this situation, because she's basically been under investigation for corruption as well. And it seems like one of these situations where nobody is particularly popular at this point. Everybody and their spokesman is getting booed no matter where they go. So it's hard to see anybody at this point emerging clearly out of this mess as a leader that everybody respects.
Yeah, the president that was elected after the Orange Revolution, Viktor Yushchenko, where is he right now? Does he have a role to play in what's going on, or is he sort of a not important to the drama at the moment.
I was looking for him, figuratively and not quite literally, and there's really no evidence that he is anywhere to be found. None of the former presidents are taking any type of role publicly and perhaps not privately either, and I'd be curious if Dave has seen something in the Russian press at all.
No, I've been looking for accounts of what he thinks as well, and I haven't seen him. He's either deeply in retirement or he's not being asked what he thinks.
So what happened with the Orange Revolution? Why did why did things fall apart? And you have these same characters still 10 years later still fighting each other.
Corruption and incompetence. Uh-huh. The Orange Revolution was a great moment of hope for Ukraine and for other people who hope for democratic change all throughout Eastern Europe and the former Soviet territories. But he didn't – Tymoshenko and the others – I mean I think the real authority in Ukraine is a group of the economic oligarchs. And these guys are similar to the oligarchs that were in Russia after the collapse of the state, because when it transited from being part of the Soviet Union to being an independent country, there was essentially a short window in which people could buy state assets very cheaply. And those state assets were mostly in oil and gas and other things. And so the oligarchs, the people who bought into those systems or who were shortly after independence able to open up telecommunications and other very profitable businesses are really the powers behind the scene. And they don't my reading of the situation is that they don't really want to be close to Russia. They're very anti-Russian because they don't want to be under the domination of Putin, and they'd rather be economically independent. But at the same time, the treaty that was going to be signed opening Ukraine to trade relations with the European Union was a threat to them because more open markets are a threat to their economic authority. So I think they actually kind of like this muddling along, which is part of the reason why the previous regime was able to survive after it got this massive popular mandate in the Orange Revolution and then essentially didn't do anything to fix any of Ukraine's problems.
Going back to November when the protests started, what was it that treaty that – is that what set this off?
Yeah. The president had announced that he was going to sign this treaty with the European Union, which would open free markets and would bring Ukraine closer into the orbit of the European Union. And then at the last minute, he ducked out and didn't sign it.
Tim Shoren.
Well, I see this as kind of a second step of the 1991 process for independence that we saw with the breakup of the Soviet Union, so many of these republics becoming independent, and Ukraine was one of them, but they were never able to finalize that break from the Kremlin and Moscow. And when the president backtracked on his agreement to move toward Europe, I think a lot of, especially Ukrainians, saw this as an attempt to prevent kind of that final break from Moscow and from Putin-inspired politics, that this is I think probably the inevitable second and perhaps kind of final step of independence for Ukraine from Russia. The problem is, as Dave pointed out, that there is no decent, credible, legitimate, ethical leadership in Ukraine. They're all, if not thugs, kleptocrats. And I think what got Yulia Tymoshenko in trouble was that she attempted to mix her kleptocracy with her desire for political power, which challenged maybe some of the other oligarchs, which is why she found herself in prison eventually. And we saw the same thing happen in Russia, that there were some oligarchs who confused their economic power with a desire for political power and found themselves in trouble under Putin. Now, that doesn't mean that Tymoshenko shouldn't be out of prison, but it doesn't mean that she should be back in political power either. And I think that the Ukrainian people are watching this first and perhaps even second generation of post-independence political leadership and thinking, these are not the people that we want to back. We want to be more European. We want to be more transparent, democratic, open. We weren't going to get that being tied to Moscow, but we're not going to be getting that with the political and economic leadership we have. The problem is, I don't know where they're going to go from here, and I don't know either the Ukrainians who want more independence, real independence, not just independence on paper, but also the regions that are primarily Russian. And I think that's going to be the interesting thing to watch over the next month, not just day.
Dave Burrow?
Yeah, no, I agree with that, is that I think the predictions are everywhere from this is the beginning of a Ukrainian civil war to this is the beginning of a slow dissolution of Ukraine into two separate countries, one of which will probably be absorbed back into Russia and one of which will persist as a more Western European-oriented Ukrainian part of than current Ukraine, which has a substantial Russophile population that's either ethnically Russian or speaks Russian as its native language and thinks of itself as belonging to the part of the world that's historically been Russia, rather where I think that especially around Lviv or Lvov, depending on which century you want to name the city, Lviv in far west Ukraine, they feel like those Ukrainians feel like they were added to this country by Stalin. They think, look, the Baltic countries became independent. Poland became independent. Those were once part of the Russian and then part of the Soviet Empire. Why can't we be as free as they are now, be acknowledged as completely independent countries? So the problem is the challenge for Ukraine as it currently exists is you have a Western half that – or maybe a Western third that really does not want to be part of Russia and wants to be part of Europe and wants to acknowledge a separate Ukrainian identity that they say has always existed. And you have a much larger Eastern half that basically would be happy to go be in Russia and doesn't want any trouble. And then you've got a certain number of people in the middle who really want more economic opportunity than they're getting.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're discussing the latest events in Ukraine. We're joined by Dave Burrows, a history professor at USD, and Tim Shorn, who teaches political science at USD. Tim, you were just about to say something.
Well, I actually have a question for Dave, too. Okay. This is our chance to get together and chat about this. is there a distinct Ukrainian oligarchy versus Russian economic oligarchy? Or is there a common economic oligarchy, and how would they view the possible dismemberment of Ukraine?
I think there's a separate Ukrainian oligarchy because it's focused on the business opportunities and the telecommunications and other things that came with Ukraine becoming an independent country in 1991. So it's a separate oligarchy. I think they're threatened by the Russian oligarchs, and they're threatened because, of course, Russia is much larger than Ukraine. Ukraine is, by European standards, a large country, but they would be dwarfed by the Russian oligarchs. And I don't think they have any illusions that they would be allowed to retain any independence. I mean, Ukraine is still dependent on Russian export of gas, and this is the Putin and prior to him Yeltsin had used curtailing fuel supplies to Ukraine, energy supplies to Ukraine, which means that homes in the winter don't get heated as a type of leverage. And I think that would be a disaster for those guys. I think that's how they view that.
Mm-hmm. One of the fascinating things that we saw this past weekend was the Ukrainians getting to tour the opulent estate of President Yanukovych and seeing the zoo and the antiques and the saunas and things like that, which seems to just illustrate completely to the people the corrupt nature of the government and what's going on. What effect will that have on any sort of future election when you talk about the corrupt nature of the other people that are Tymoshenko, Yulia Tymoshenko, the other people that have been in power and maybe are players that the Ukrainian people are going to be able to get rid of these people completely? Or, what is the significance of those images of that estate?
I think if you've seen the images, and I've seen some of them on BBC News and some of the other feeds, it's like a McMansion Versailles. It's like a cheap version of Versailles. I was pleased to note that I guess he's still the current president, even though he's fleeing and in hiding, was left-handed as I am, although I don't have gold-plated embossed golf clubs. I think it confirms something that most Ukrainians have known and haven't thought about, which is that this has existed behind the scenes. There was a similar process with the collapse of the Soviet Union, and people got to go see the dachas where the party leaders had lived. That in public they present this. The press is not as free in Ukraine as it is here. They don't have. I don't think that there's a Ukrainian TMZ or something chasing down the rich and famous to show off their mansions. So most of that kind of really opulent lifestyle happens behind the scenes for most Ukrainians. And I think that could be one of the things that galvanizes more ordinary Ukrainians into saying it doesn't, as Tim has said, there doesn't look like there are any really viable politicians on the scene right now. But people who can come out and take a decisive stand against that might have an advantage because it confirms what most Ukrainians have sort of thought, that their leaders were living off of them and living pretty well.
Well, Tim Shorten, looking at Ukraine and the relationship between the U.S. And Russia over the past 22 years since the collapse of the Soviet Union and Ukraine's independence, has Ukraine been something of a battlefield? I don't know if battlefield is the right word, but it's a place where the U.S. and Russia are playing sort of a tug of war?
It certainly seems to me that that's a more recent phenomena, that for the most part, the United States had concerns elsewhere. But I think the larger concern over the last few months had been, what are the objectives of Russia? And it started to appear that perhaps President Putin and the Russian government now had real designs on Ukraine. And also, as we look in a map around kind of that southern horn of Ukraine, to look at the Transdniestrian region of Moldova as well, which is also a heavily Russian-populated area. And the question becomes, did Russia have designs to kind of recreate a greater Russia again, or was this simply, kind of everyday politics where you seek to get an economic or a slight political advantage? And I think that the administration, the Obama administration, reached the conclusion over the last few months that this is really an attempt by the Putin government to do something more than it had been doing before. And so I think that it became a bit of a battleground, and it became a struggle for the Europeans to determine how far they should go in this process as well. Clearly, they were hoping that Ukraine, I mean, certainly it is not on the fast track to EU membership, but would become a more integral part of Europe. And so we saw a fairly hard line coming out of some of the European capitals as well. Now, one of the issues that Dave Rose was brought up was the issue of natural gas and oil, and the Western Europeans depend on that a great deal too. So they can't go too far in pushing Russia while it's still winter. So they're going to have to play their cards, their hand a little slowly. But this is now, with the developments over the last 72 hours, this requires the Europeans to come up with a real plan forward. And I think the United States may step back a bit and allow the Europeans to determine which direction they want to go. And I think that that $75 billion debt that Ukraine has right now is going to make the Europeans and nearly everyone else cautious, because essentially, while the winner may get Ukraine, they may also get a really big debt that has to be serviced.
This brings up the question, Dave Burrow, who's in charge of Ukraine right now?
The guy is actually someone that I had never heard of prior to this happening. He was a junior member associated with Tymoshenko. So the interim president, his name is Alexander Turchinov. He is I was looking him up briefly this morning. As I said, I'd never heard of him. He's written a play and some other so he's known as a poet and other things. But he's been a closely associated with Tymoshenko. He's lost some elections outside of her ambit and outside of her orbit when she was in prison. He ran for mayor of Kiev and lost. But he's been involved in most of the pro-Western campaigns for Tymoshenko or her predecessors since the collapse of the Soviet Union. So he seems pretty deeply involved, but he has not much track record that I was able to find. So, I mean, I'm sure that there are specialists in Ukrainian politics and Ukrainians who know who he is. But for the rest of us, he comes out of the blue.
This is one of Dave's and my big fears, is that we wake up in the morning in an area that we've been watching and somebody we've never heard before has surfaced. And the question becomes, you know, where do they come from? And it'll be curious to see is he viewed by a lot of members of the Ukrainian parliament as somebody who, while with old ties to Tymoshenko, is somebody who can put a steadying hand on the tiller, who doesn't necessarily have a major political agenda of his own, but can help guide the parliament and the government through these rather troubled waters. And I think that'll be another one of the interesting things to watch is this transition government, how many of them have their own kind of goals and agendas, who is going to rise out of the mud that is Ukrainian politics right now. And I think that we have to be very cautious. This isn't, while everything happened very quickly over the last 72 hours, this is something that may remain unsettled for weeks or months ahead. And so we may be back in 6 months.
Yeah. The comparison that historians are already kicking around and some Russian commentators are already kicking around is that this is the February Revolution of 1917. The February Revolution of 1917 was the collapse of the Romanov dynasty and the collapse of the oligarchy. But of course, it didn't establish a stable transition and was overthrown by the Bolsheviks in October and with the October Revolution or the Bolshevik coup d'etat. So the question is, especially since the existing president is still being backed by Russia, even though he's a fugitive and technically under arrest. I mean, we've got – I think one of the interesting short-term things to watch is if Russia starts making the argument that – I think Prime Minister Medvedev made a statement early this morning saying Russia will act in the interests of Russian citizens inside Ukraine, which was something they used to say a lot during the immediate collapse of the Soviet Union. It was one of the ways they asserted their authority using Russian minorities or majorities in most of the newly independent countries, about whether they will say, look, he's the legitimate leader. He was freely elected. He may be under the law passing him saying that he's under arrest is illegal, and setting up a dynamic where you've got an interim government recognized by the West as a transition government and a fugitive president recognized by the power with the most interest in the region. And how that will play out, I don't know. But I think the potential for that kind of clash, because Yanukovych was legally elected. The previous elections in 2014, as we saw, were tainted by fraud in the first round of the Orange Revolution election. But I don't think the 2010 elections have come under similar scrutiny. So it's going to be interesting.